Welcome to Dumb Question. I'm your host, Kent McKay, and I know a lot of interesting people. I bring them on, and I ask them dumb questions. In this episode, I'm joined by Linnea Ward, Calgarian comedian. We talk about dishwashers, ukuleles, and farts. This is part one of two of episode six of Dumb Question.
Up.
How you doing?
Very good. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me on your show.
I'm with Linnea Ward.
Hi.
Good. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going really well. I didn't have a washing machine, so I had to hand wash a bunch of clothes.
Oh, that's the worst, especially when you have it like... Ugh. You have one.
Yeah,
you're in the house
there.
And you're like,
it's there.
I got this on lock. And then, is it mechanically, like, you gotta get someone in and look at it? Or?
Yeah, I'm gonna just get a brand new one. But basically, like, what I had to Google, like, how to wash your own clothes. And I figured, like, that's a good skill to have in general. Like, I think that's a good skill to have. But yeah, so it worked out great and it was really fast. But it's the spin cycle that, you know, I just don't have. That, so especially with sweaters, and it's just...
that's a whole thing. Man. That was one of my things when I first got married, was the two promises. Like, we're going to have a washer-dryer in the house, and we're going to have a dishwasher.
That's also so important, too. I haven't had a dishwasher a few times in my life, and I've only had the one sink. Like, if you have the double sink, it's not...
It's less crummy?
It's not as bad, so you can put your dirty... dishes in one, and then they can just stockpile.
How much time you waste? Like having, you don't want to do a dish. You want to like do a bunch, and you can do it all at once. And you're standing there, like, what am I? 17th century serf? Like, I'm not a peasant. I'm gonna get a machine.
Exactly. And I always find like I just get just there's always just water. I'm always like, you know, probably trying to go out or something. So I'm like, well, I just have to do this in my underwear or something. I don't want to get
sudsy.
Yeah, like I don't know.
It's a whole thing. We got into our new house, and the dishwasher there was leaking like a little bit. And we had hardwood, and we're like, we don't want to wreck the hardwood, so we stopped using the dishwasher for like 3 months because we couldn't afford a new one. And then so I'm like, I had the day off. I'm like, I'm gonna go fix this thing. So I spent the day like on my belly, looking underneath with a flashlight, running cycle after cycle, watching for where's the drip, because I'm sure it's a newer machine, so it should be like. Half a turn on of a hose or something simple, but I got to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like nothing's coming. Finally, I noticed there's a little bit of drip from the door. So I'm like, okay, it's in the door. I've narrowed it down.
Yeah.
Get the door off. Everything's dry. What's the problem? What's the thing? So I, on the off chance, I get on the Googles, and I Google my model number leak. And I find this guy on YouTube, and he's got my model, and he described the problem, same problem, and what it is, and the inside of the front of the dishwasher is a bundle of hoses and cables, and they put a tie wrap on it to bundle it all together, you know, like a little zip tie, and then they leave this much of a tail, like an inch long tail on it, and what happens is a little bit of water condenses on the hose, runs down, and instead of into the tray where it's supposed to, it hits the tie wrap, and drips out, like falls the tie wrap out and drips onto your floor. So you take your clippers and you cut. And you go click and you cut the thing off and you turn it like a quarter turn, and you're done.
You're good. It was
and,
so easy.
You saved yourself like a $50 repair
by
doing this thing. I'm like, I gotta hunt this guy back down again and buy him a beer.
Fuck yeah!
Because he just
Fuck
saved
yeah.
me
so
like a whole bunch
and
of money.
And it worked.
And it worked.
You went in there and now you can like fix
I can fix that machine problem. I know that one.
Yeah. So if somebody has a broken washing machine, be like, hey, I'm your man.
Did you check the tie wrap?
I love that. No, YouTube videos are they're great. I watched one today. This was this morning, and it was because I've seen like the flamethrower ukulele thing. There's pictures of it, and that's like what I want to eventually have. I want to have a flamethrower on my ukulele, like Mad Max. And so I watched this YouTube video, but holy shit, I don't think that should be on the internet because it's teaching you how to, you could do a lot of harm with that. Like you take a caulking gun and
how to build a flamethrower.
And like you could attach this thing to anything. Like it doesn't even need to be attached to, like the ukulele was just like a front. Like that's just.
That's just something to hide the hoses and pipes and switches.
Exactly. Yeah. So, so just like a big lighter and it just, I couldn't, wow. I'd be scared. I'd be very, very scared.
I can only think of like three places where you could like fire a flamethrower at a venue and they'd be like, yeah, it's a good place.
Right? Yeah.
Bonnaroo, and like Burning Man.
Yes, that would be fun.
And maybe Beakerhead with a 15 permits.
Survive, yeah, like yeah. As long as it's yeah, as long as it, it is yeah, like yeah.
You have to be outside. You
have
like,
to be, yeah.
Your roadies next to you with a
fire extinguishers. Fire extinguisher. Yeah, well, because I went to the one installment at Beakerhead. The one with the big dragon,
the mother serpent.
Yeah, it was a big serpent, and yeah, it was so. It was so cold out, so everyone's just huddled around there. But yeah, damn, like I didn't understand where the gas was coming from. They probably like drilled, so it's all like I'm like this could explode at any moment, and like the mud's all like there. I ruined a pair of shoes there. I was like just stuck. It was epic, yeah. But
it's worth it.
Flamethrowers are not a practical thing to have. They're not a practical thing that you need. Like I think fixing a wash, like learning to learn how to make a flamethrower. Is not practical knowledge.
That's not hand washing your undies. That's
yeah.
Like this is like almost be forbidden. Like I should not know.
Yeah.
I shouldn't be tempted to build a flamethrower.
No, I don't think anyone should have. Yeah, because everyone has a caulking gun. It was just like simple steps.
What's that? It's the next level. It's like okay, you can build something that fires flame.
Yeah.
Can you make it so? The third time you fire it, you don't burn yourself up.
Yeah.
Like that's the next level.
That would be the next thing, yeah.
That people who don't survive the first two don't get to learn.
Exactly, yeah. It's kind of survival. What is it? The Darwinian kind of thing. The survival of the strongest. Is that? That's
yeah, that kind yeah, of thing. Yeah. But yeah. Like, I heard a thing on like NPR about like human cannonballs. And it's like the death rate of human cannonballs is 100%. Eventually, if you do this long enough, eventually you die doing it. Because as safe as they can make it, it's still a stunt and it still takes time. And it's like that 99.9% success rate. And then they keep rolling that if you roll that dice enough times, eventually you die. So like the history of that thing is actually very dangerous.
Yeah.
Even though they probably make it very safe.
Oh, totally,
But it's... You just do it. You do it long enough, and you die. You die doing it.
And also, too, like there's not that many people that are like, "Hey, when I grow up, I want to be a human cannonball." Like, how many are there? Like, how many? Like, what is this like group of people?
Yeah, it's a small sample.
It's a small sample.
100% of 20 people. 100%.
Yeah.
Is
see, like, I think that they're doing it all wrong. Then they need to have a bigger, broader spectrum. More we need people.
Thousands of people just human cannonball going to work.
Yeah.
And then that's 20 people a year. It's like, hey, that's nothing. That's
it's fine.
It's math at that point, right?
It's kind of like skydiving. I've always wanted to go, but I feel like every single time I've wanted to go skydiving, there's always been some sort of death.
Like 2 weeks earlier?
Yeah, like 2 weeks earlier. And like, and I guess like technically it would probably be the safest time to go because they would, you know, be upping their security protocol and like making sure that, you know, they're not going to let you just fall to your death.
Yeah, I think like the tandem jump that they make you do the first so many times, I think is like super safe.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do it, but...
Yeah. I don't know if I need that. Like, I don't know. I like my thrills other ways, I guess. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I need that.
You
think
of jumping out the window of a perfectly good plane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's something... I don't know. I think one of the things that you do it once and then people love it and they fall in love with it.
Well, But I don't get it. It was kind of like running. Like apparently you get a running high. I have yet to experience this. I don't get it. I just feel sweaty and gross. And I want to go home.
The high is like
yeah.
past the gross, and then there's a high, and then your feet fall off. Then your toenails fall off, right?
Yeah, like exactly. Yeah.
And, like, and you got to like run just enough to get the high, but enough to keep your toenails and your nipples from chafing. You know, like,
exactly. Yeah. There's such a fine balance between that. It's good.
So you're a performer. You have you run shows around town.
Yes.
So did you go to school for the performing arts, or did you go to school for like accounting and say,
I went to school.
Off and join the circus?
Well, basically, I wanted to be in business, so I started off at Mount Royal College when it was a college, and I went there for it was like 2 years. I was going to take the business transfer program, and then I ended up saying, "Nah, I'm going to go take nursing." And I did that. I was there for I think a few months, and I said, "Nope, don't want to do it." And then I ended up doing event management, and got my certificate of that at Bow Valley College.
So I picture in your house, you have the big catalog of courses.
Yes.
And it's like dog-eared and it's highlighted.
All
like
there. I've Sharpie, done, yeah, I have all those like, things,
there's like tabs on various things, and there's like montage, nope.
Yeah, just a whole lot of nope.
So business, and then nursing, and then event management.
And then from there, I ended up, I ended up not even using that at all. I ended up getting into face-to-face marketing, so like just stopping people on the street, like being the third party person for like credit cards and like that, however, I think that that's kind of where the performance artist in me started, because that is like, you can be unafraid, that you cannot have any fear, and you have to go talk to strangers, which is like stranger danger. Like, you're not supposed to fucking do this. Pardon my language.
I put the explicit tag on it. People know
Good. Yeah. This is not suitable for, I like to drop my F-bombs. Yeah, and that's kind of where that started. Yeah, I was managing that, and then I ended up doing kind of coordination and marketing coordination. So I would consult people. I would help them out, so small trades, things like that. I did that. Yeah,
That rolls really well into the performing arts, especially the independent performing arts, your stand-ups, your improvers, your...
Yes.
Because you are a small, you become a small business, basically. Yeah.
You become a brand.
You have to brand yourself, you have to market yourself.
Which is so hard, though. I find it so hard to market myself. Like, I have no problem, other people marketing. Like, yeah, like, let's get you, hype it up. But myself, I just find it, I'm just like, oh, ew, no. Like, I made myself because I've been doing stand-up for long enough now that people, what is that? There's a leaf blower
outside.
That's good.
And now all the time on the podcast. Name that gardening implement. I say it's a leaf blower. What do you say?
I also think it's definitely a leaf blower. It has that very vacuous kind of. It sounds like a.
So do you think it's electric or gas?
I definitely think it's on somebody's back. Yeah. Like it's a Ghostbuster. And that's his. He's just blowing the leaves.
Okay, so the guy Double or Nothing. What is the guy's name who's running
it? I'm thinking it starts with a D. I'm going to go with Derek or Darren.
Devin, maybe? I think Devin's our big leaf blower.
Devin, the leaf blower.
You're going to write down Devin.
Yeah.
And then stay tuned to the end of the podcast.
Yeah, we'll
bug him on the way out.
Yeah, I'll be like, hey, excuse me, what's your name?
Are you Steve? And he'd say, no, I'm Devin. And we're like, high five.
Yay! I love that. I learned how to do a high five finally. You have to look at the person's elbow. I didn't know that.
Sometimes have you like,
I just
like swish.
Swish, yeah.
Yeah.
Now it's hard to miss on purpose.
Hard to miss.
I've tried to do the whole
thing. You
want to
make eye contact.
You do, yeah.
You want to make.
Yeah. You have your whole peripherals.
Elbow.
Yeah.
Line up.
You have this whole triangle up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are some solid.
The cross arm is like I'm doing lefty, lefty, righty, righty.
Yeah.
The different one. And then, you know, the Eiffel Tower?
No.
Stand up. You go back leg,
and then high five, and you hold it. Oh, hold it,
and then you're at Eiffel Tower.
Then you go Eiffel Tower. We look like the Illuminati sign right now.
You make a big triangle with your body.
I love
and
that.
And then you call Eiffel Tower, and everyone goes, boom, and you're gonna hold it. I hold it for like 3 counts.
It's kind of like a freeze frame.
Yeah,
like a cheesy like.
I want to do a little challenge, and I can contribute, but this is my challenge.
Yeah,
I want a song called Freeze Frame High Five.
I love that. There has to be one made
because I want one for our eventual. Eventually, we are working on like a fringe late night cab show. and I want to be able to do a thing like the guys go, yeah, and they high five and they freeze on stage, and then it cuts to like freeze frame, freeze frame, high five,
freeze frame. Those are the right chords.
Yeah.
Freeze. No. Freeze frame.
Freeze frame.
High five.
High five.
High five.
The highest of the highs.
Ooh, you fly so high. Freeze frame.
Freeze frame.
High five. High five. High five. High five.
Just like, I want to learn that. Like a 30-second just. Holding a high five, the music comes up.
Just to honor, really high respect,
like
honor
the glory that is the freeze frame high five.
Because that would
and
be
credit, and credit to Rowan.
Oh
right?
Fuck yeah, yeah. Another F bomb. I wonder how many F bombs. That's going to be a challenge. How many F bombs do you think I'm going to drop this entire time, just casually speaking? And I didn't realize I had such a potty mouth
until
I realized. I'm like, oh wait, this is going to be. Oh wait, this is. This is on recording.
Well, it's one of those things, like, it's all situational, right? Ooh. Like, in high school, like, I'd be in class, I'd be fine, I'd be fine. And then we had, like, a science field trip out to, like, Tumblr Ridge thing. And I became field trip Kent. And I guess, like, my mouth just turned out foul. And the teacher had to pull me aside and say, and this wasn't like, I wasn't getting in trouble. I was getting in, you really need to watch your language.
Yeah.
Here.
Yeah.
And I'm like...
And
my high school swears would have been weird too. It would have been like, we were beginning to bite my crank.
Oh,
was
God.
One. Like, does anyone say bite my crank?
Because it was like the
90s.
It was like the 90s, right?
Late 80s, early 90s. Yeah. Would have been bite my crank and numb nuts. Numb nuts was very common.
Numb nuts. What else? Yeah. What other were like the slangs? Like those burns, those sick burns of the 1990s. I think one of our favorite, we did the Fringe, the cabaret, the late night cabaret. I think that was probably one of my favorite. Pre-brainstorming sessions that we had, talking about everything 90s. Because we have different interpretations of what is the 90s.
I was a little older than the 90s.
And I'm technically, like, I'm a first, like, generation millennial. So I am born in 1984, and that is when millennials, like, that's when it all starts. So I don't really feel like I'm quite a true millennial, but yet I am.
You know, on paper, but it's like,
yeah,
you have a kid.
Yeah.
So people are like, oh, millennials, they're so entitled. It's like, you've gone through motherhood and you raise a kid. Like, you're responsible as AF, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, so it's like, millennium means nothing because you're like right in the beginning.
Exactly.
So
I'm
kind of a late model Gen Xer.
Yeah. Like, so, I think there's a name for it. You're called like a...
They tried Gen Y for a while.
Yeah.
I think that was supposed to be the millennials, but it was Boomer.
Yeah.
Boomers, and then they had Gen X kids.
Yeah.
And then Gen Y, which is the other. But I'm still... They kind of widened it out. So I'm late Gen X.
Yeah.
And more or less, I fall into that. But all the stuff about Gen X, like all your Douglas Copeland stuff...
Yeah.
...was a little bit older than me. It was the people who were like in their first shitty JoJo post-secondary.
Yes.
While I was in post-secondary.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's just a little... Like all the movies about like singles and and you know Mallrats and all this type of thing about that generation. I was just a little. I wasn't in the workforce yet. I wasn't.
Quite.
I wasn't. I wasn't really dating that much. I was kind of on the cusp of that. Meanwhile, all these people were like getting drunk and spending their JoJo money, and I'm like, I'm in school. I'm not experiencing this.
No, not at all. But I think that like I know that my high school experience, like it wasn't until I hit like grade 12. When I like went to like my first party and had like my first underage drink, like kind of thing. I was just like, I'm like, oh, I didn't know. Like, I heard of all these parties. I just didn't know how to get invited to them. Like, I didn't. Yeah. I wasn't that person that did that. So like, maybe if you were like a wild party animal, you could relate to these things. But I couldn't. But I get it. Yeah, it's kind of this.
My brother's 12 years older than me.
Oh, snap.
So that's
okay.
Almost a that's almost a whole generational difference.
It is.
But he's still technically Gen X too.
Interesting.
But he was on the other end of the spectrum. So
So he was slightly too old for that.
He was way older than, so by the time, so when people are like, big into skate punk and stuff in the 90s. Yeah. He was well in adulthood and had sold, had sold his skateboard kind of thing. And I was like, it's weird. It's weird trying to like nail down these things.
Yeah.
The one spot is the music. Like when
the music, yes.
The Sirius XM. I'm like, I click. And I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, why do I know all the lyrics, all these songs? Because I look over and the thing, it says, the 90s.
Yes, yeah.
And I'm like, oh.
The 90s. And like, I have a different, like, for me, like, I'm slightly younger. So for me, like, the 90s, to me, like, my music was more... Like, I think I was in grade 2, for example. I've been in elementary when, like, you know, Nirvana, all of that. Like, that grunge era was happening. Like, you know, I just remember, I think it was, like, night... What I do remember, though, is fashion and that switchover when it turned to flares in 1997. I remember that. I got my first set of flares, and I was like, I am never wearing skinny jeans, or not, they were called the tapered jeans look, ever again. And well,
yeah, I fed straight leg jeans.
I like those
forever.
I like them. I think they're good.
As trends go, I'm like,
you're just always straight and narrow. Yeah,
they're narrow. I'm like, why are you wearing bell bottoms, McKay?
Yeah,
and then that was early 90s, and then the flare came out, and then I'm like, I'm in fashion, and it got really big, and like. And like, why are you wearing such narrow pants? And I'm like, I'm not changing.
You're not.
Some guy in high school took me aside and showed me how to roll your
to tuck
your jeans tight, narrow. And I'm like, I never got quite the hang of it. I'm like, you know what?
I still can't.
I'm a straight leg guy.
I like that.
And let the world change around me.
I like that.
Even a stock pant cuff is right twice a decade, and I'll just... I'll be passing in fashion as it goes by.
Exactly. But you'll always kind of be... Yeah, like, it won't be too much. It'll just kind of be... Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I think... Yeah, I think that's the ultimate thing to have. Like, just, you know, be yourself. You don't need to be a slave to fashion. If you like your straight leg, have your straight legs. I like that. I respect that.
It's one thing I can stand by. Maybe because I don't have a choice in the matter. It's like, these are the pants that fit me, and they're straight leg jeans, and they kind of, this is what I do.
Yeah.
And it's tough. Like, there's numerous stories that you pick up through the, like, cartoons and stuff. Like, somebody, like, comes back from the holidays, and they got, like, the poncho. The poncho, these woven Mexican ponchos were with, like, it's kind of almost a burlap.
Really heavy.
And they come home, and everyone's like, what are you wearing a poncho for, you fool? And he goes, and he takes it off, and he hangs it up in the closet. Oh. And then, like, 2 years later, the cool kid wears one.
Yeah.
So suddenly everyone's wearing ponchos.
Exactly,
so you
got
to get your poncho out of the closet, and you put it on.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, you're trying to be cool.
Try hard. Who do you think you are? Yeah.
And it's like, this fashion is bullshit.
It is bullshit.
I'm just... It is.
It's such, like, who decides, like, the fashion? Because, like, I'm kind of pissed. Because, like, now, like, I, like 1997... That is actually, because I was in grade 7, and that's kind of like when, you know, like, you're starting to sort of, like, you're still super young. Like, I look at, like, because my son is 7, and I was thinking, like, I remember being in grade 2 and thinking I was, like, super, like, mature and, like, no. I was just a little tank. I was just a little munchkin.
Yeah.
And, yeah, no, but I just felt so grown up. I had these big flares, and... Yeah, I resisted. I did, but now there is no other choice. Now the fashion, it's those skinny jeans.
Yep.
And you can't get the flares anymore. And I'm looking forward to them making a comeback, because that's going to be nice.
It'll come around. These things none of these things are new.
No.
Any time period, you just go, how wide are the lapels? How long is the tie?
Yeah.
And you just kind of adjust how it goes. Male fashion got locked down pretty quick. And it's like, you get a shirt and tie and lapels, and this relative lengths just change over time.
It's better. It's a lot better.
You get these 50s ties, they stop, like, at your sternum, but they're wide.
Yeah.
Right? That's you're cool as a gangster guy.
Yeah.
And then they got narrow. I had a black leather tie in the
80s. Very, like, Pulp Fiction-y. It's like, I'm just thinking thin, very, like, Quentin Very, very,
th- very thin. It was leather. And it didn't tie up. It was a zipper.
Oh, my God. With a zipper. Yeah, it was.
That's 80s.
I love it.
You want to have an 80s time capsule.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, because there are the defining things. But then, like, there's always, like, we're talking about how the transition between, like, the 80s to, like, when did the 90s really start? Like, what year like, kind of, does that start? And
did it pivot, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's kind of like, so yeah, it technically started, and that's, like, kind of how I feel like with being a millennial, per se, like, technically. But it's, like, but it is that transitional. That was kind of, like, year zero. But you're not, you're still sort of in that
It's still holdovers, and what the dominant culture was. Ooh. Like, neon was a very 80s color, but it really... Like those, to be those hypercolor shirts from the 90s, early 90s, was the last hurrah of that 80s movement.
Yeah.
Grunge was probably the big, for me, the big music turn.
Oh.
Where, for me, that's where it went from hair bands of the 80s.
Yeah.
Warrant was selling out stadiums. And then they put their next album, the same, the same time as Nirvana was on the rise.
Yeah.
Nevermind. Soundgarden, Mudhoney, all these bands, like, suddenly that sound came out and everyone went, what is that? I've never heard this before. Like, you'd sit down and go, this, of course, it's really just warmed over punk rock. Like, it's really, like, they didn't, but still, like, I've heard punk. This is different. What is this, right? Yeah. This is on CD. This is punk on CD. And everyone just kind of just stopped, and suddenly Warrant was playing The Bar downtown because everyone's like, you cut your hair.
Yeah.
You wear plaid. You don't. You take your mom. Yeah. You take your mom's scarf off.
You're not punk rock.
And the sound just made that big 180. So that's a big, for me, a big turnaround because it was drastic. And people like big into grunge were still like, this is an important album. And you'd stop and you'd like, people who are into music stop and went, this is, you got to listen to this stuff.
This is what it is. What do you think, like, kind of like the defining bands, or like, I don't listen to any of the new stuff now, so I have like no idea. Like, who are those, like, those defining bands? Like, what would...
Like, now?
Yeah, or even, like, the 2010s, I guess, like, we're in the...
I don't know.
Like, who would be, like, the... What would be, like, that... What was the style of music?
I don't know. Like, looking now, like, when I turn on the radio now, there's songs and I'm like, this song could have been played in the 80s.
Yeah.
It could have been played in the 90s on the pop station.
Yeah.
Like, there's... this landmarks, like auto-tune going from something you hide in the track
to being like, to, yeah,
let's show it off.
That's a line in the sand. That is, yeah. And also, anyone can make their own music now. Like, anyone can.
The democratization has changed a lot.
There's no quality control per se. Like, anyone can get like a SoundCloud, whatever thingy, and
put it out there. And you can noodle in the basement on your auto harp or whatever instrument you're into that week. Yeah,
I think it should be gongs. Like, I think that that's a new wave. It's just gongs.
You're calling gongs? I'm gonna write that down.
I'm calling gongs. I'm gonna call gongs. Like, that is my prediction for. I think you probably it won't really hit off until the 30s.
Yeah,
I kind of want to just talk like I like that we're in the no, we're not in the 20s yet. We're in the 10s. We're still in the 10s.
Yeah, late teens.
We're in the late teens. Oh yeah, so I think in the 20s the gong is going to make a comeback. I don't
gong heavy.
The gong heavy. I think maybe the theremin.
To qualify, the gong, would it be to the height of like the 70s where every drum kit had a gong behind it?
Yes.
Like that thing where it's like, welcome to drum school.
Yeah.
Here's your mallet.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Gong. I love it.
And there's a great sound. They dip the gong in water.
What? I didn't know
this. Yeah, there's a thing.
You can do this thing?
Yeah, there's a rig.
The gong's coming back. Yeah, I stand true to that.
I saw it like once in like a documentary where they got it on this rig and they hit it in the gong and they dip it in water so the frequency changes. So it goes boom. And the pitch changes of it.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
It's a weird thing. I don't know. I'd have to Google it and see what the deal is. But you need a rig. You need a whole like gong rig. That'd be interesting. I think there was a theremin uptick in 2006 or so.
Was it? I didn't know that.
Yeah, suddenly they got a little bit cheaper.
If a theremin were to present itself to me, I would not say no to it. Like, I'd be like, okay, and I'd probably treat it like... Like anything I do, like I just carry around in a backpack.
Pocket theremin. So
yeah. Oh, what? Pocket gong.
Pocket gong.
Pocket gong, just in case. Like, you never know. Well, that's what I did with the uke. It was supposed to be a guitar.
Yeah, you always have a
ukulele. I always have a ukulele because I stole it from my son, the first one. It was a toy ukulele. I was talking to somebody about it. They're like, oh, well, yeah, you're so cliche with your ukulele. Because, like, right now, that's like main culture. That's hipster culture.
Cute girls with a ukulele.
Yeah.
Is a thing.
But however, this was more, it wasn't. It's not because I love the sound of the ukulele at all.
It fits in a backpack.
It fits in a backpack. You can carry it around. And I was like, it's the 10,000 hour rule. Like, this fits in my backpack. And it was, I kind of miss having the smaller ukulele because I would just have my backpack and it would just be in there. And all of a sudden, I would just have a ukulele. Surprise.
And you could fiddle with it.
I could just, and people were like, "What? Where did the ukulele come from?" I'm like, yeah, let's sing, bitches. Let's do this. Let's do this.
I think we should get, I want to try to find an upright bass, like a big, like double bass.
Yes.
Double bass. And then like a smaller ukulele.
Yes.
And then we come on stage and, but you got the double bass.
Oh yeah, hell yeah. I can do that.
Because you're short and small. And I'm big and fat.
I love
so,
that.
So you got the big bass yeah. And I got the same. So you completely contrast it.
I love it. And when we come on stage and like the instruments are sitting there.
Yeah.
And like, you know, we come up and we, you know, like it's there and we kind of just
present ourselves. Like,
present ourselves.
And we kind of look at the instruments.
Yeah, like, we look, yeah, we're just like, yes. Yeah. And then, but then we go into it and we just rock it. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Just,
I think, yeah. That, I think I'm going to be a good sound.
Boom, 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 boom. I have to learn the bass now.
A big bass and then yeah. A uke, I think, would be an interesting sound.
Perfect. It'd be good.
But then the wrong size, like the big guy with the
little
guitar.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's
perfect. The stage picture is so good.
High five.
Well, that was my next thing is like I have my 4-string ukulele. That was the first step. I learned how to play it-ish. And then I think my next one is going to be the cello. I want to just cello, just like use some Yo-Yo Ma, but not, you know, probably not as good. And sing about farts like under that underscore. I just want to underscore myself is what I want to do.
You want to have a fancy instrument
I do.
For your fart song.
Yeah, I do. Like I want to like, it needs to be highbrow farts because I think, you know, like, fart jokes and fart songs are just I don't think they'll ever get old. I know to me at least. I appreciate a good fart joke.
These are some of the oldest.
Yeah.
Recorded jokes.
They're great. Well it's funny. It's just like farts are funny. Like a Deacon, like what really solidified it for me was Deacon, it was a few Christmases ago, all he wanted from Santa, and he wrote Santa a letter. He's like, "Dear Santa, I've been a very good boy. What I want for Christmas is a farting machine toy," and he drew it, and that's all he wanted. That's all he wanted.
So like a push button.
It was like a push button. It has like 9 different farts. So like it's like one. It's like it sounds like a shart, and then it's just like this wet and loosey one. And there's a boop, and there's so many different. It's a musical. It's musicality in its set, like in itself. Like I think farts are.
It's a great unifier.
It is. Like, it's good.
No one hears about a fart or goes. I can't relate. I can't relate to this.
Yeah, exactly. Like I don't relate to this. Or if they do, they're lying to everyone.
Everyone's lying.
Yeah, everyone's lying.
Everyone who's never like
just let one just rip. It's so funny. Like it's just it's just especially those surprise ones where you're just like,
you don't have the opportunity to like excuse yourself when it happens.
Yeah,
and then try to talk louder and talk louder.
It's good. Yeah.
So here's a little personal task.
Yes.
To make an onomatopoeia sound, what is your go-to like sound? Like do you use your hand or like your baseline fart?
Yeah, like it's just like
and he farted.
This is the sound of the fart. Like,
okay, so it's like a tongue thing fart.
I think it's more of that. Actually, I don't even. It's more of a it's like
a cheek thing.
Yeah, it's a.
Okay.
I don't know. Well, because like I think that would be like the tongue out. It'd be
here's a telling thing because when my wife does it, he goes, and then he farted, and she goes, like a little tainty one,
yeah.
Then I'll go, and if I'm telling this, my story, like, so I'm in the bookstore, and out of nowhere comes, and I go, and she's like. She's like, why is your fart so big? I'm like, it is.
That's the baseline. I love that. Because no, everyone, I want to pull people. I just want to go on the street. I just want to just ask, be like, you know, like make a fart noise and like have just, I want to see. Because other people, they'd be like.
Because no one's ever heard, no one's ever been confused, but no adult has gone.
No.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't understand.
I can't relate to this.
No,
like, this comedian just does not.
No, he didn't do the fart. Like, I don't understand what noise he just made.
Yeah, nothing on me makes that sound.
I've never heard that sound before. Because, like, if you think about, like, how many different, like, sounds of farts, like, you've made in your lifetime, it's probably astounding. It is.
Hey guys, it's Kent McKay here coming in to say we talked about farts for a good 20-25 minutes after that. I've cut it down to the best parts, so don't worry, you're not missing anything. But you will be missing something if you don't come back next week when I release part two of this interview with Linnea Ward. It's great stuff. So now, without further ado, I'll return you to the end of this episode.
Well, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Cool.